So I'm talking about release management in large free software projects. That was part of some research I did as part of a PhD, which I finished last year. So some of the information, like release dates, are not up to date, but basically the main message which I have, that hasn't changed at all. So I'm going to start off with the background of the research, where I'm coming from, and how I looked at things. Then secondly, and that's the main part of the talk, is to actually look at the projects which I studied, look at what kind of problems they had in terms of release management and what kind of solutions they implemented. And then I'm talking about time-based releases. So that's what the talk is really about, is why time-based releases work. And then I will give a few comments about how to implement time-based releases, or what people have to consider if they want to move to time-based releases. So basically, I started off, I've been involved in a number of free software projects for quite a while, most importantly Debian, and I've always been interested in quality aspects and in aspects of coordination and management. So how do you run a project? And so when I started my PhD, I was interested in studying free software from that quality perspective. But with quality, you can see it in many different ways. So you can look at it from a very technical point of view. You could look at metrics and try to measure quality, but that's not what I tried to do. I was more interested in sort of the process. How do you change the processes of a project, the coordination and management processes, so that the project will work very well, and that in the end, the software will have high quality. So quality is a very big area. I mean, and that's what I learned, and I couldn't do everything in 3 years as part of my PhD, so I really had to focus on one specific area that's part of that bigger quality angle. And so I did some interviews, and I saw that one of the big issues which some projects have is release management. And again, it's not just something with Debian. I mean, Debian is very known for having problems with release management, but there are lots of other projects which have issues with that. So I decided to focus on release management. So I studied a number of different projects, and I had to select those projects. I needed some kind of criteria, and I came up with those four different criteria listed here. So the first one is I was looking at large and complex projects. There is a very good reason for that, because in small projects, they have very different problems in terms of release management to large projects. In a small project, like a couple of people, the problem is mostly a resource problem, that they don't have enough time to fix things up. And because most of their work is development, they don't have very much experience with doing releases. But I think those problems, that's nothing fundamental. Whereas if you look at large projects, then the problem is really about coordinating, about how do you coordinate, you know, thousands of people to do the release. So the next criteria is voluntary. So I was not interested in studying a free software project that's done by paid people, like by because that would be pretty different. If you have paid people, you can rely on them, and then release management isn't as hard as in a volunteer project. So the problem is, well, how do you define volunteer, and what is a volunteer project? Because if you look at things like the Linux kernel, most people are actually paid to do the work. So is that a volunteer project, or is that a paid project? So I ended up solving that definition problem by looking at voluntary contributions. And that means the basic question is, does the project have control over its contributors? And that's not the case in the Linux kernel, because Linus Torvalds can't tell anyone what to do, because, you know, IBM or HP is telling them what to focus on. The other thing is, I was looking at distributed projects, because again, that makes coordination much more difficult. And the last thing, as I said, I was looking at time-based projects which implemented time-based releases. So the basic idea of time-based releases is to make a release according to some kind of schedule, some kind of time. So you say in 6 months or in 12 months, we will make a release, instead of the old model where you say we make a release once we have achieved a certain set of features. So that's the projects I looked at. So 7 projects, most of them pretty well known and pretty large. And now if you look at them, you can argue about a couple of them. So for example, is Debian or is the Linux kernel time-based? And again, there are different opinions about that, but I think the Linux kernel is time-based because they have a 2-week merge window in which the big changes are made. And after that merge window closes, the rest of the time is spent fixing bugs. So even though the release cycle is different, sometimes it may be 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, but it's still, in my opinion, time-based because of that merge window. And Debian is I think, slowly moving towards time-based releases. So there was a discussion about how often Debian should release. And then they decided on 15 to 18 months. And that, in my opinion, makes it time-based. The other projects are more clear. So GNOME, I mean, that's the typical example of a time-based project. And one thing you can see here is that quite a few of those projects have a 6-month schedule. But that's not something you need to do. So now I'm going to go through all of those projects. First of all, I'm going to show you a table with the releases, just so you can get some kind of picture of you know, what has been going on. And then the next slide will be what kind of problems those projects faced in the past and what kind of solutions they implemented. So with Debian, you can see that when Debian was young, it actually had pretty frequent releases, like 6 months, 7 months. And then as Debian became bigger, things slowed down quite a bit. And I think the biggest disaster was the 3.1 release, which you can see was quite long after 3.0. And then after 3.1, I think things have improved. And you can see that 4.0, it was planned for the end of 2006, so December 2006. And in the end, it was released in April. So it's getting there. Right.
I think the CDs weren't building that weekend, so that had the deboarding.
Yes, I think the past problems, I think one of the biggest problems with Debian was that release management wasn't very well organized in the past. So we had very infrequent release updates. Some release updates basically saying, well, I think we should make a release in like a couple of months, and people read that and, you know, you can't take that serious. And so people just ignored it. Another problem was that blockers were found very late during the release. And that's partly because it was so disorganized or unorganized that people said, well, I think now it's time. We should freeze. We should slow down for the release. And then people realized, oh, hold on, but we haven't done that. And we actually need that. One example would be we realized that we don't have the security infrastructure in place, so to do security updates. And obviously, we can't put out the new release if we can't actually support it.
Are you talking about 3.1 or 4 in general?
Well, that's just basically in the past. So some of those problems have been fixed, but that's not about a specific release. So, and what happened is, I mean, some of those problems, you saw them in quite a few releases. It's not something that happened only once, even though maybe some of the specific problems were different, but the same, like the overall problem were there quite a while. And then the other thing that happened was because of those delays in doing the release, the software, because we had frozen, but then the software wasn't released and things dragged on. And by the time you released the software, both the new software was quite out of date already, and the old software, I mean, that was just horribly out of date. You couldn't actually install it on any hardware anymore. So that was a problem, particularly during 3.1, I think. And because Debian has done that not just once, but it was several times that releases were delayed, Debian really got a very bad reputation that people just don't trust Debian to release on time. But again, that is something that has changed. So some of the solutions, what Debian did was really to implement much better our release management structures. So we moved, so Anthony, when he was release manager, at some point he asked for assistance. So we moved from one release manager to a release manager with assistance, and then we actually moved to full release team. So nowadays we have multiple release managers as well as release assistants. So it's much more organized, and there are more people being involved nowadays. The other thing we did was to actually set a release date well in advance. And that's something we didn't have in the past. So people would ask, so when is the next release going to happen? And the answer is, well, we don't know, or we release whenever it's ready. But that makes it very hard for you to coordinate or to plan. You know, should you put in that new version of a package which maybe has some very experimental changes? Because if you're close to release, well, you probably shouldn't do that. But if you have more time, then it's okay to do that. And people just didn't know because there wasn't any plan. And that is something that has changed. So now we have a release date, or at least some approximate, like the second half of 2008. And there are regular release updates, so people actually know what's going on. They know what the issues are that are still there. Another thing is that we defined the release targets. So the release team now differentiates between release goals and release blockers. So if something is a real release blocker, we really need to fix that. But if it's just a goal, then it would be nice to have it, but we're not going to wait for that. And they classify things and make it clear whether something is a blocker or whether it's just a goal. Another thing is that the release team clarified the responsibilities. So in the past, it often happened that things didn't work during the release, and then no one felt responsible to take care of it. And I think that's much clearer now. So one example would be the different architectures. So Debian supports quite a few architectures. And in the past, if someone was broken on an architecture, well, no one really stepped up to fix it. But now it's clear that there are specific people responsible for each port. And if something's broken, well, they have to fix it. So I think the biggest outstanding problem, so I think there have been major changes. And I think the biggest problem at the moment, and I think it has improved a lot already, is that the people in Debian have to realize that, release dates are real and that you can meet targets. Because in the past, whenever there was a release update, people would just look at it and say, well, we never managed to meet a deadline in the past, so I would just ignore that. And nowadays, people know actually, well, if there is a deadline, the release team is serious about it, and you have to make your changes before. So it's really a cultural shift that's needed, and that's happening. So the next project is GCC, which has a couple of releases, and you can see that it's about, I don't know, 10 months or a year. In theory, if you read their development plan, it should be every 6 months because they have three stages, and each of them should be 2 months, but that's the theory. So some of their problems, I mean, in the early days of GCC, they had the problem that the development was very closed. It was very hard for other people to get involved or to test development versions. I mean, they weren't actually available. And there was a very long time between stable releases. And like I said, there were no public snapshots of of the new release of the code being developed. So it was very hard to test and to see what was going on. So at some point there was a fork of GCC and development picked up again. And then the problem there was that now people were contributing, they were making changes, but the development tree was broken pretty often because of that. And if the development tree is broken, you can't test it, which means you can't work on the release. So it was a big problem. So some of their solutions were to, so they moved to that open development style. They created a steering committee, which has certain authority, for example, to appoint maintainers. And like I said, they divided their development stage or development into three different stages. So the first one is you can make major changes. In the second one, you can still make changes, but only smaller changes. And the third stage, which GCC 4.3 is currently in, is basically just bug fixes and documentation updates. So I think that's a very good model. And the other thing is that they implemented peer review for patches. So, and they're very, very serious about it. So basically every patch, unless it's obvious, has to be reviewed by someone else. And that way you can really make sure that the development tree is not broken. And that way people can test it, can use it, and you can see how well it works. The biggest problem, and like I said, some of that work was like from last year, is that the release manager is very busy, so he hasn't been pushing people as much as he should have been. But I can say that fortunately that has been fixed as well, because just about 2 weeks ago, three new release people were appointed, and they're really pushing for it. I mean, if you look at the GCC mailing list at the moment, you can see that things have really picked up, and especially since both Red Hat and SUSE want to use 4.3 for their distribution. So people are really behind in making that release happen.
Oh, how many peer reviews does it take to get a patch accepted?
Oh, it's just one person needs to review it. So they have maintainers for different parts of the code. And then there are historically a couple of people who can review any change, but that's something they don't grant that anymore for new developers. That's a historical thing. They want to get rid of that. But yeah, so maintainers are responsible for different parts of the code, but you just need one person to sign off. So the next project is the GNOME project, and that's really used as the example for a successful project in terms of release management. And as you can see, they make releases every 6 months, and they really meet that target. So they actually have a 2.20 release out, and as you can imagine, it happened in September 2007. But what you can see here, if you look at the old releases, is that they actually had some problems in the early days as well, especially for the 2.0 release. There were major delays. And I think GNOME is funny in a way, because nowadays people complain about projects like Debian. And what many people don't know is that GNOME actually had very similar problems in the early days, but they managed to fix those problems. So I think it's a very good example of how that things can actually be fixed and how to do that. So like I said, their biggest problem was during the 2.0 release. 2.0 was supposed to only change some internal interfaces, and that took much longer than they expected. And so at some point people said, well, you know, we have worked on GNOME 2.0 for such a long time, and if we put it out now and users are not going to see any difference, because the only thing we did was to change internal interface, well, they're going to be really disappointed. So let's take some more time and put in some stuff which users can see. But obviously that means delaying the release even further. So there were quite a few delays, and there was major frustration going on. And the other problem is that it wasn't clear what was going on. And sometimes the release manager said, oh, let's make a freeze, let's do it. And then they realized, oh no, actually, we're not there yet. And that happened quite a few times, so people were really frustrated of what was going on. Another problem with that was that vendors which wanted to ship GNOME, which wanted to put them into the distro, well, they didn't know which version to use. So, and the result of that is that people, like vendors like Red Hat, they backported changes. They basically had their own development tree based on some kind of old version, and they made most of their changes and fixes there, which obviously takes away development for the new release, which means even more delays. So at some point, GNOME said, based on that frustrating experience, we really need to fix it. And they introduced quite rigorous policies and a schedule. And they got the idea of time-based releases based on what Red Hat was doing with their Linux distro. And in many ways, they said, well, actually, GNOME is like a distro because we have all those different applications. And what we do is we put them together to one system. So they tried to follow that model, and it was very successful for them. The other thing they did, because in addition to policies, you need some kind of procedures to convince people to adhere to the new schedule. So what they started to do was to threaten people that, well, if your change is not ready, if you put in some changes and they're not stable on a given date, then we're going to take them out. And that was a very good motivation for people to make sure that their changes were actually of high quality. And so GNOME managed to release on time. And because they managed to do that, and not just one time, but several times, they gained a lot of credibility. And nowadays, if you think of GNOME, I mean, it's just a non-brainer. I mean, you know they're going to release on time. You can expect a release in March and in September, and you know that that's just going to happen. So I think that was very successful. But there are some people are wondering about how well time-based releases are working. So they say it's very good for updates, for like small feature enhancements and fixes. But people are wondering, well, now that there is a release every 6 months, does that make GNOME less innovative? Because you can't do any of those really major changes. So people have been asking, so we had like 218 now, 220 now, and people have been asking, so where is GNOME 3 going to be? You know, that new, that revolutionary different desktop. And can you actually do that with time-based releases? And I don't think there is a single answer to that. I mean, on one hand, I think people are saying that it's not a big deal because if you want to implement a big feature that takes more than one release cycle, then you know it doesn't have to. You can always do it on a branch. You can just take your time to do it. And if it takes 2 years, that's fine. Just merge it in whenever you're done. So I think most of the people actually involved in GNOME don't think it's a serious problem because, and then they ask, well, you know, what do you want to have in GNOME 3? You know, what is that going to be, that, you know, major different thing? And then they give some features, and then actually some of them have been implemented already as part of GNOME 2. And some people think that if there was something that was totally different, it would be a different project anyway, because people are used to the way GNOME works. You know, they want GNOME to be that way. So if someone did something completely different, well, it would be a different project. And and that's actually something that's happening. So if you look at the OLPC, they have their own interface, and it's based on GNOME technology, but it's different. But I think it's an interesting discussion because if you look at KDE, they have basically, with KDE 4, I mean, they had that long period of development. And I think it's interesting to see how that's gonna work out. So the next project is the Linux kernel. So I've only listed the old style stable releases here. As of 2.6, they changed their model and now they have more frequent releases. So the problem they had in the past is, and I mean, you can see there was like 30 months between releases, so it was a very, very long time, was that there were so many changes. I mean, you had so many changes, and by the time you had a release, it was just really hard to get all of that tested. And people usually don't touch development versions, so it's very hard to find people to test it. So you would make a new release, and then you would see that, well, loads of things are actually broken. Another problem is that features got out very slowly. And because of that, many vendors backported features and fixes to older releases. So like I said, they changed their model nowadays. They're putting out a new release every 2 or 3 months. And that means that there is a steady flow of code into production. So now if something is implemented, that means that the feature gets out very quickly. In theory, you could do something and then have it in a stable version within 2 months, which is really fast. And the other good thing about it is that people test the new code, so you get pretty good feedback. And it also means that vendors can actually work directly with the current releases, and they can work with the community. So I think nowadays you can see companies like Red Hat, they're much more involved in the community kernel, and they don't maintain as many patches as they used to. The outstanding problems, the first one is there isn't really any long-term solution. So there are new releases every 2 or 3 months. And I know that Adrian Bunk maintains a stable kernel based on 2.6.16, but it's something it's something that's basically done by him. It's not something that's done by the community. So I think there are quite a few people reluctant to use that kernel because they don't know how well it will be supported. The other problem is that there are so many changes. And it's nice because features get out quickly. But the problem is it's not just features, it's also regressions. I mean, the kernel has loads of regressions, especially on platforms that are not as popular and at some other platforms. So I maintain some ARM and MIPS stuff in Debian. And I mean, some of those, I mean, that's old hardware, like SGI hardware. I mean, some of that is broken in every new release, breaks it in a different way. So it's really quite frustrating. And Andrew Morton has been saying for quite a while now that he thinks that the kernel is getting buggier, but it seems that most of the other developers just ignore what he's saying. So I think that's something we still need to watch and see what we can do or what they can do about it. So OpenOffice, again, you can see that they had quite a bit of delay with their 2.0 release. And after that, they decided to go with free monthly releases, which they sort of did. And now they actually moved to 6 monthly releases. So again, I mean, very similar problems because of those long release cycles. There was very little testing, many changes accumulated, which made testing even harder. Another thing that happened in OpenOffice was that some features got implemented very late during the release cycle, so even during the beta cycle. And I think that was partly because Sun wanted to have that functionality in StarOffice, and so they said, we need to put it in OpenOffice first. And they didn't really care, even if it was very late in the release cycle. And I think that because of those delays with 2.0, some vendors, like I think Ubuntu, end up shipping a pre-release because they thought that the version would be out very soon, and then it took a couple of more months. So there were quite a few discussions, and in the end, the project moved to a release cycle of 3 months. And that really allowed them to create a pretty good feedback loop between developers and users. It allowed them to have better planning. It allowed vendors to plan. And they say it has increased motivation. And that's really because developers, they can make some changes, and 3 months later, it will be in OpenOffice, which is so much different to in the past, where you would have to wait like 1.5 years or 2 years. So I like to give the example of someone working, a student working on the summer of code. I mean, if you do something during the summer and then it takes 2 years, so you can give a CD to your parents and say, you know, I did something there. You know, or if it's 3 months later, you can give them the CD and say, you know, I contributed that feature. It's just such a big difference. People are more likely to go back and say, you know, I will write yet another feature. The other thing they did was to make the release process more transparent. So OpenOffice has the problem that it's heavily dominated by Sun, and there are quite a few things that happen within Sun and not within the community. And I think they're now trying to change that, make that more transparent so people can actually follow what's going on. So like I said, they moved to a release cycle based on 3 months, but then they realized that's actually not the perfect model for them. They found two things. First of all, OpenOffice is a very large application. So they found that their QA team said that it's just impossible to fully test OpenOffice if there is a release every 3 months. And the other thing is that their users said, well, we don't actually want to have a new release with new features every 3 months. So they have now moved to a model where they make a new release every 6 months, and every 3 months they make a smaller update with only bug fixes. Yeah, Plone is an interesting project. So like I said, I did my research. I finished that like last year, and I was quite happy to forget about it for a while and do something else. So now, before giving the talk, I looked at Plone, what they've been up to recently, because the latest status for me was that they were working on the next release. They had some good ideas about how to improve things, but it wasn't clear whether they were actually going to release according to their schedule. So I looked it up, and no, they didn't manage to do that. So they wanted to move to 6 months, but you can see it took them 14 months to push out the release. So their problems, I mean, very similar. Took them a long time to release, and that means there were so many changes, and they had some upgrade problems because of that. The other thing in Plone is that most people working on Plone are like web developers, so they want to use Plone for their web projects. And if there is no good release cycle, you don't know when the next version will be out, that makes it very hard for your project to decide whether you should use the current version of Plone or whether you can use features from the development version. So they really wanted to have a process that is very smooth and predictable. And they implemented a number of really good development structures. So they have something called a PLIP. That's a Plone improvement proposal. So if you want to make any major changes, you actually need to write a proposal, and there are a number of people who can review and accept those proposals. And I think that's a very good thing. They implemented deadlines and showed developers that they're real. And like I said, my question was, can they release on time? And the answer seems to be no, they haven't managed so far. But hopefully, there's still hope. So x.org, the last project. So they moved to 6 monthly releases. I think they're having some problems. So they're not quite there yet. So the problem in the past with X386, I mean, that was just really horrible. I mean, they had infrequent releases, they had no plan, and the structures were very rigid, so you couldn't do anything within the project. So at some point, people you know, forked the project, and things have definitely improved. A problem they also had was that the code base was, I mean, it was like one big monolithic thing. It was very huge. It was very hard to get people willing to download that big tarball and to get familiar with it and to test it. So it was also very hard to find volunteers. So what Exodog did was to split that monolithic base up into different modules. And what that allowed them to do was to have two different release models. So you have those different components, and they can have their own release cycle. So they can release whenever they think they have enough changes to make a release. And then for the overall X.org release, they basically just take, they just bundle all of those individual applications into one thing. And that overall release is time-based. But the nice thing about that is they have a fallback mechanism, because if one of those applications don't put out a new release in time for the roll-up release, they can simply take the last version. And that works in X.org because the interfaces are pretty stable. So you couldn't do that in many other projects, but in X.org you can. And I think that's a very interesting concept. Just let individual applications release whenever, and then make a time-based roll-up release where people know it's going to happen every 6 months, and if they're ready, great, and if not, well, we just use the last version. So now we have seen a number of projects and a number of problems, and some of them were actually quite similar. So long release cycles, which means many features accumulate, many changes, it's very hard to test. It's very hard for vendors to plan because it's so unpredictable. But my question is, so what's the fundamental problem? You know, why do we have those problems? Because development works so well, why does release management, you know, fail? And I think the reason is because of the way how free software projects work. Usually, development is not very coordinated. People just go off and do whatever they're interested in. I mean, there is no overall plan. People just do what they're interested in. They have their own agenda, and they work on it. But the problem is, during a release, you need to get all of those people, you need to coordinate, you need to get all of their work completed at the same time. And that's where the coordination problems happen. And in the past, or in the old model where you say we release according to some kind of features, in free software projects, that usually doesn't work because you can't plan. You can't make any plan based on features because you simply don't know when a feature will be done. So what happens is at some point the release manager will say, oh, I think it has been such a long time since the last release, I think now we should do a release. Which means that the release is announced out of the blue. So at some point they say, we should make a release. And then you can see those individual developers. So I've displayed three different streams here. And the one on the bottom will say, well, that's a great time. I mean, I've just finished my feature. Let me put it in and we can make a release. But then the first guy will say, well, you know, I'm almost there. Just give me 3 more weeks and I'll be happy to do the release. So the release manager will say, oh, you know, it was very unpredictable. Let's give them 3 more weeks. So the one on the bottom integrates their feature. The one, the first one almost finishes their feature, but there is a slight delay. So, but given that we have told him that there is some more time, well, let's delay for another week. And that's the opportunity for the second one, you know, because now there were 4 more weeks, which means they're almost there. So they will push hard to get their feature in. They will put it in, then realize, oh, something's not quite ready, so there is a delay for another week. And then another developer will see their opportunity and push it in. And so you get those delays. And the more delays you get, the harder people will push, because they know, if I don't get it in now, you know, I don't know when the next release is going to be. Maybe it's going to be in 6 months, but maybe it might be 2 years. Oh, let's push it in. And that basically, and we've seen that in a number of projects. And with time-based releases, that simply doesn't happen, because people know in advance when the release is going to be. So they know, well, I have to be ready on that day. And if it's ready on that day, well, I can integrate it and it will be there. And if it's not there, well, the next release is only so far away. So the basic idea of time-based releases is not talk about features in terms of release planning, but just talk about time. So there are a couple of misconceptions. Sometimes people will say, well, if we release on that specific date, you know, isn't quality going to suffer because maybe there is some kind of bug, you know, really important bug. And so the idea of time-based release is not that you have to release on that date. I mean, sure, if there is a problem, you need to fix it. The idea is just to take a target date as a planning mechanism. And the other thing is people might say, well, if you only talk about a date and not about features, you know, are people actually going to implement features? Because if I can just sit back and relax, because the release is going to happen anyway on that date, even if I don't do anything, you know, why should people do anything? And actually what you can see is that when people know that there are regular releases, that they can get their stuff out to people, to real users, then they're actually more motivated to put in work. So it actually, in many projects, it's actually increased the speed of development. And the other thing is that even though your planning mechanism is time, you can still talk about features. I mean, you can plan to have those features, but fundamentally the difference is that you're not going to wait if a feature is not ready. And that's the key difference. So do I think that time-based release is appropriate for every project? No, I'm not saying that at all. I think there are four different conditions. The first one is pretty obvious if you think about it, is you need enough work. I mean, if it's a small project and no development happens during a release interval, then, well, it doesn't make sense to put out a new release. But I think time-based releases are really appropriate for those large projects like Debian and GNOME, KDE, you know, where you have a thousand of people and there is always some development. There are always new features, there are always bug fixes. I mean, maybe there isn't a killer feature, but there is always a stream of changes that's worth releasing. The other thing is that distribution has to be cheap. So that's not a problem for free software projects. You can just put it on the net. But if you're more like a traditional company where you want to sell boxed copies, then I don't know if time-based release is appropriate, because if people want to, you know, if you want to have people buy a box copy, then you need to give them a really good reason. So you need to have those new features. But that's not an issue with free software. Another criterion is that the releases don't have to require any specific functionality. If free software is done by a company and they have some agreements that, yes, the new version will have those features, well, then you can't really do time-based releases. And the other thing is that the project has to be modular, because if it's not modular and if one component is not ready for release, well, then that means you can't release anything. But if it's modular, then you could say, as in the case of X.org, where we would just use the last version, or we can simply exclude that module. So now, why do I think time-based releases work? I think that time-based releases are basically a coordination mechanism, which relies on two different things. The first one is regularity. So what time-based releases create are a reference point. So like I said, the development is people go off and they do their own thing. But then what the release is that everyone comes together and integrates their work, and that's the reference point. They see, oh, that's the official version. And then they can go off again and do their own thing. And then again, they come together and to create that reference point. And if that's done regularly, then that's good because people know what other people are working on. And it allows them to work independently, normally, without much coordination. The other thing is that regularity gives a certain of discipline and self-restraint. If you don't know when the next release will be, you're definitely going to push in now. But if you know the next release will be in 6 months, then you can say, well, if I'm not going to make it now, I mean, 6 months, that, you know, that's not too far away. I can wait for that. And the other thing is familiarity. If you have a release every 6 months, you just get familiar with it. It's not a big deal. At some point, it's like getting up and brushing your teeth. You don't have to think about it. If you do release every 6 months, it just becomes part of your process. So the other thing is schedule. Basically, if you have a schedule, and you can only, in my opinion, if you do feature-based releases, you can't really make a schedule because you simply can't plan. You don't know when the feature is going to exist. But moving to time-based releases allows you to have a schedule. You can say the release will be on this day, which means features have to be done on this day, translations have to be done on that day. And that schedule basically contains all the information people need to know. So they can simply take the schedule, go off, do their own work, and then read the schedule, and then they know exactly when they have to come back. So that means that the schedule allows people to coordinate themselves. Because in the past, the release manager would have to tell everyone or would have to ask, you know, are you done? Or can you be done tomorrow? They have to coordinate with everyone. But now you can simply give them a schedule and they will come back in time. And if they don't come back, well, they miss the train. It's that simple. So it really reduces the amount of active coordination that's needed. So what are some of the incentives? So I think time-based releases are good for everyone. For organizations, they really care about predictability. If you have 10,000 machines, you want to be able to plan when to do the upgrade. If you're a user, you just want to have periodical fixes and smooth upgrades. If you're a developer, well, you want to know when you have to get your code in, and you want to see your contributions getting out quickly. And as a vendor, well, they want to plan and work with the community. And again, that's something that time-based releases allows them. So the conclusion, so I think that time-based releases is very much a reaction to a project becoming larger. So I think that as a project is very small, you know, if you're two people, you don't need any release process. You just talk to each other and say, you know, are you done? Yes, well, I'm done. Let's make a release. But suddenly you're successful and you have hundreds or thousands of people, and suddenly, you know, you can't just talk to each other anymore so easily. You need a different process. And I think time-based releases is something that's very appropriate for those large projects. So I think that what we have seen is projects like GNOME, they have reacted and they have changed their processes because of that growth. Like I said, I think time-based releases work because of regularity and schedule. And so I only looked at three software projects, but I think the whole idea of, well, how do you coordinate a project, I think that's something you can see with other volunteer projects, not just with software projects. But the question is, well, how do you coordinate a project if you don't have any control over the contributors? And I think time-based is a very interesting strategy. And it will be interesting to see whether something like that can be applied to other projects. And more information is available on my website, so my whole thesis is online for people who want to read it. So I think we have a couple of more minutes for questions.
Just thinking, you know, you said, like, if you think about 6 months, it's not that often, and so if you miss it, you're not really
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's one of the big questions is now, well, if you want to move to time-based releases, you need to define your release interval. Is it going to be 6 months? Is it going to be 18 months? And I think that it has to be relatively small. I think that if it's longer than a year, then you don't get all of those benefits. Like, for example, I mentioned familiarity. You get familiar if you do it very often. But if the time is like every 5 years, that would still be time-based. You know, let's make it every 5 years. I think then you wouldn't get those benefits. So I think doing it every 18 months, I think it's a bad idea. I think you get loads of problems because also you have loads of changes and then it's much harder to release. But that's something which Debian, the problem is you have people who want to have, like server people who want to have slow releases. And Debian can't do both frequent releases as well as releases that are longer supported because they simply don't have the resources to support both. So at the moment it's going to be 18 months, but I don't think it's ideal. The other thing, so I skipped one slide, which was actually about choosing a release interval. The other thing is there are network effects that if different projects use the same release interval, like if everyone released every 6 months, or if, for example, GNOME releases just before a distro releases. So that has been very beneficial for GNOME and Ubuntu because they have synced their releases. And people have been saying KDE should do the same. And I think if you think back about the table, you see that most of the projects actually release every 6 months. And it seems as if that was going to be the like standard. I don't know if it works for every project, but it seems to be a pretty good model.
I have two questions. How about for projects that are smaller projects? Because everyone always talks about the big projects, but the vast majority of projects have one primary developer who does all the feature development, and then maybe if they're lucky, they'll have a couple of smaller developers who do bug fixing and very small things. So how does the time-based release, does that have any effect on them?
I don't think it's appropriate for small projects. So like I said, in the beginning, I looked at both small and large projects and then decided to focus on large projects only. For small projects, the biggest problem is that they are very good at development, but they're not good at project management and they don't know what to do for the release. And I think what would be useful is just like a how-to guide, which tells people what they need to do, what kind of different steps they need to go through in order to do a release. I think that would be very helpful for them.
Yeah. But another question I have is, I didn't see any real data about this, but did you analyze like release quality versus, say, cycles, but then also versus groups that didn't? So you've clearly come down on the side of time-based release, but this is actually the second time I've seen some presentation. I didn't see much data about saying,
right,
you know, well, these people are on a time-based release and their release quality is X, and these people are not on a time-based release. Did you do any of that kind of analysis, and if so, what did it look like?
No, so I didn't look at like quality or any like empirical data in that sense. My research was based on interviews, so I talked to different people in the project to see, you know, why did they do it, and what they think are the benefits or drawbacks. But obviously I looked at, you know, people who thought, for example, in GNOME there are a number of people who think that time-based release is not the way to go. So I talked to them as well to see what their perspective is. But I agree that now that work has been done, more of understanding what the issues are and why people are doing it, it would be interesting to look at some more empirical data to see, you know, what's the quality or, you know, what are the differences. But that's nothing I've done.
Well,
I mean, yes, the Debian project has a security team, and their task is to do that. So they have infrastructure, and that's what I mentioned, that at some point they couldn't do the release because that infrastructure wasn't in place. I'm not sure if I actually answered your question, but.
Mm-hmm. And we'll allocate these resources to that for 2 years. Or is that kind of an ad hoc basis?
Maybe once they release.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.